I agree. I understand cats, but like I never wanted one because I don't want to have to earn love with a pet. It's hard enough to earn love in real life. Like I am interested in the free love from a dog.
Hi, my name is Ella Rose, and you're listening to the Joy of Sunflowers podcast, where we talk about real, raw stories and experiences in pregnancy loss and infertility.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. How are you feeling? You're getting close to your date, right?
I'm 22 weeks, but I feel like how most women feel when they're pregnant after loss, just
Yeah,
kind
day at a time.
of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very shocked at that. I didn't expect it. I've had a few scans and I just sort of sat there feeling numb and looked at the scan. I looked at the baby, it was moving. I just kind of like, that's great, but I don't know if I'm taking it home. So.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Like
Oh.
I'll believe it when we're there kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just not real until it comes home, really. So, how have you been?
Been okay. Day at a time, similarly. Try to go with the process of rather than thinking too far ahead, just what are we focused on today and what does today look like? And that helps me a lot.
Kind of knowing where you're at right now and accepting that so that you can keep moving towards anything.
Exactly.
Not getting stuck in thought of what's not happening or what could.
Absolutely. It's too overwhelming to think about what's next because we've seen too much of, what happens.
I wish we could know the risks so that if it does happen, there's an understanding. We know there's a whole community, but still really enjoy it. I don't you can't have both.
We make such different decisions if we knew with certainty how they'd end up.
Oh yeah.
It'd be easier to spend the
Hindsight is
money too. Absolutely.
it can be good, but it can also be really annoying. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, and thank you for rescheduling last minute. I'm sorry about last week. I'm looking forward to chatting today.
Yeah, is your dog okay?
She's home. She's doing better. We have to see a cardiologist to really know the extent. And that won't be for a few weeks because they're not common. There aren't a lot of dog cardiologists in the area. So, but she's home and she's on a medication that's supposed to keep her stable until we do that. But it was a scare. And she's a bit older. But she's not that old, or maybe it's just in my head that she's not that old. The vet, kind of said, he's like, well, it's common at this age. And I was like, but she's a puppy. And he's like, she's not. I just kind of kept saying to her, I'm like, not this year, Tonks. This is not the year. But
So,
it's just good to have her home. She had to spend the night there, and that was awful. It was terrible. And it's scary. And like a baby, you can't tell them what's going on. You can't explain to them why you're leaving them there or what's happening. And so there's also that guilt of she's scared. She doesn't know what's happening. She doesn't know why we're walking away from her right now. So having her home has been good.
yeah.
Yeah, she's sitting on my lap right now so that she doesn't bark at the squirrels while we're chatting.
Cute. I'm guessing she's quite small. She's not like a
She
big one.
is. Yeah. She's about 15 pounds.
Okay, so that's why you're like, but she's still a puppy.
Yeah, exactly.
Confusing when they're like little and you're like, but they're always little.
I
They
know.
haven't grown.
I know.
We grow attached to our pets because they become part of the family and we want them around forever. And unfortunately, they don't live as long as we do. It's unfair.
It's the worst. It's absolutely it's the most unfair part.
I mean, you could try and get a pet that will live, probably outlive you.
I
But
think the next one has to be a turtle or something.
yeah,
It
well,
has
someone,
to
I mean,
be.
you could, I was thinking a pet that you can't have as a pet, like a shark. Sharks
Oh,
live
okay.
for
I'll look
ages.
into it. I'll look into it.
Live for like forever. So you could get a pet shark, you know?
If anybody wonders why we're trying to find a place with a pool, that's why.
Greenland sharks apparently live 400 years. So I don't know how they work that out or if that's true, but that's what.
We'll have to find a, they'll have to go in the will or something.
Yeah. And look after my pet shark.
Yeah. People would be very unhappy to find out that that's who we left them in the will.
Yeah, they'll be like, really? You couldn't have, like, I don't know, gotten rid of it first and then.
Wasn't some cash?
Yeah, like cash for it. I don't know if it would turn into sushi if it once it's handed off. But silliness aside, because we have real pets who we can actually stroke. You can't do that with a shark.
True.
I'm sure
Not without a
someone's
lot of
out there
caution.
going, yes, you can. I've scuba dived and I've Such a shock. There's something to be said about our little fluffy pets. I've got a dog.
I agree.
It is nice. You feel there's a little bit of protection. Mine gets scared at like everything, but he still barks. So I'm like, well, he's still a warning sign. You know, if something happens, he'll bark and he'll let me know. But
That
yeah, he'll
probably
bark at like the wrong things. I'm like, that's daddy. What are you doing? Stop it.
Does.
Freaking me out. You're making me think there's some burglar or something. And it's like, dad, just shut up. Obviously, I try and be really nice about it because he's just a dog and he doesn't know. But yeah, sometimes I will shout at him. They are a bit like kids in that way. I'm going to shout at you because you're not listening.
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like a kid gets it more though. So it's even more frustrating with a dog.
And I feel like I can spoil dogs a little more because I'm like, you know what? You never need to grow up and get a job. So
Yeah.
I'm just going to spoil you. I'm, you know, I don't have to worry about you ever being self-sufficient. You'll always have a home here.
You don't have to be a good person because you're a dog.
No, you totally.
And
I'm the only one that ever needs to like you. Don't worry.
Yeah, and what makes you a good dog is being ultra loyal and loving me so much that
Absolutely.
Dogs are the best. Unlike cats, I had a cat before and she was.
I agree. I understand cats, but like I never wanted one because I don't want to have to earn love with a pet. It's hard enough to earn love in real life. Like I am interested in the free love from a dog.
Yeah, I've got to say, I don't hear many people saying their pet cat is like a child.
That's true.
It's not. You can't get the same attachment from a cat. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, all you cat lovers out there, but you just
No,
can't.
I agree completely. They do
They
not
don't.
care if you're there or not.
No, they just don't love you the way a dog does. Dogs are so loyal and they just love you. You give them food and they're your best friend forever. You give a cat food and she's like, oh, it wasn't what I wanted.
That's so spot on.
Yeah, and then they saunter off.
Exactly. They're like, oh, are you sad? I'm going to go in the other room so I don't have to see it then.
Yeah, the only thing you get from a dog is like wagging tail because they're so excited. A cat, you get a saunter.
Yeah.
Attitude. Sass. You definitely don't get that from a young child. Dogs are the closest you can get, I think, for pets wise.
Yeah.
But yeah, go for a turtle if you want something that will live long. I mean, I had
turtle or shark, one of the two.
Yeah, I mean they're not as fuzzy and playful, but they're still playful. I've my sister has turtles.
Nice. My dad has turtles too. It's funny.
Such a random pet, isn't it?
So random, but he loves them. It's like a thing. He's got like turtle figurines everywhere because it's a very bizarre thing. One day he just decided turtles are his thing.
Nice. I love it. A lot of people say if you're planning on having kids, you should get a dog first to like sort of not practice, but like have something that is reliant on you and you've got to keep it alive.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people say, oh, well, I can't even keep a plant alive. But there's a difference between.
Plants are harder. Plants don't tell you when they're hungry.
That's what I was going to say.
Very tricky.
Yeah. Like,
my dog will let me know if I haven't given them the right amount of water. They're like, okay, done. Okay, done.
Yeah. Yeah. Some gardeners out there going, plants do tell you in their leaves.
Right.
Yeah. Before we sort of dive into your story, why did you get a dog?
I've always had dogs. I love having dogs when, but my husband has never had a pet at all before. Blows my mind. You know, every time I said we should get a dog, he kind of would say like, he talked about the burden of it a lot. He's like, oh, then we, you know, one of us has to always make sure to get home. We have to get a dog walker. It's harder to take trips. And then you get it. And I have had dogs, so I've understood. I'm like, the love is so worth it. All of that is totally worth it. And now that we have one, I mean, I swear half of our conversations are just saying to each other, look at the dog, look at what the dog's doing. It's like, definitely has been amazing to see him with her, his love of her, his taking care of her. And I did not see it coming.
Yeah.
I really thought he was just going to be a bystander in this pet ownership game.
Yeah, I mean, why watch YouTube videos of dogs and cats when you have one?
Exactly.
And they do weird stuff.
I also tried to explain that to him. I'm like, when it's your own dog, you get to know their personality. You know, it's not like visiting someone's dog or dog sitting where they're just, you're feeding them and they're there. I'm like, there are expressions and personalities, and you can't know it until you have one.
Yeah.
All right. So moving into your story and your journey, sounds like you always wanted to have kids in your life.
Yeah. You know, I don't know that there was ever a time when I questioned if I wanted kids or not. I think that it always just felt like a given as part of my life that I would have children. I was that person who, before I was old enough to babysit, I was the mom's helper with the neighborhood kids, and I nannied in college, and I tutored at the elementary school, and just a lot of parts of my life revolved around children that it never even occurred to me to think about it as, do I want this or not? I just always felt like this was supposed to be part of my life, that children would be part of my life. And for that reason, I think it's made it particularly hard to have to, at this time in my life, have to think about, well, what does a child-free life look like? Where am I able to find joy in the possibility of a child-free life? Because you only really fully understand that it's not a guarantee once you start struggling to have it. You just kind of assume, if I want them, I'll have them. If I don't, I won't. But then you actually get to the point of struggling and you have to think, well, God, what is the alternative life look like? But I definitely didn't consider life without children until I realized that it's not a certainty.
Yeah. And I think obviously, because we get taught you do the thing, you have a baby, I think there needs to be a little bit of education there, like, just so kids are prepared.
Yeah.
So even if you say, you know, not everyone has an easy time, because then there's like that little, oh, I do remember at school they said not everyone mm-hmm. finds it easy, and I fit into that group. Okay. You know.
I agree. And I think that we do often hear, the concerns of, if you wait too long, it could be difficult. But we don't hear about as much the difficulties regardless of when you start trying. You know, I was 31, 32 when we started trying. So I was not yet at that age where the issue was because I was so much older. I also think that had I known more about these concerns, I would have listened more to my symptoms that I've had my whole life. I was diagnosed with endometriosis in my 30s, but when I was 10 years old, I had such painful periods that a doctor put me on birth control at 10 years old, rather than exploring, this might be something else, this might be something deeper. And so had in my education or in the medical field, we were having these conversations, I might have looked into it sooner. I might have, given myself more opportunities. So yeah, I think it would be phenomenal if our health education was less fear-based. If you have sex, you will get pregnant, and a little bit more medically based.
Yeah. Or action-based even. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of women have a similar story to you, with their periods being not right. Think, maybe they were getting some kind of like weird symptom, and then their doctor just puts them straight on the pill,
And then it just masks those symptoms for years. It doesn't heal anything. It just masks what's going on.
Yeah. Like, I spoke to a lady the other day, and she has depleted ovarian reserve. That's it. Reserve. Yeah. I was going to call it syndrome, but I was like, I don't want to call it a syndrome. but yeah, reserve. And I'll link her interview below, but she had problems at the age of 16. Something was not right, but they put her straight on the pill. And it turns out she's going through menopause. They reckon she probably was in that premenopausal from the age of 16, because it wasn't until like her 20s where she came off that they learned that, yeah, you're actually going through this sort of menopause. And
how frustrating. And imagine the options she could have had if they had, treated this with seriousness. I think that it seems to be the only bodily system that I've ever been able to think of where, when you go to the doctor and you say, this bodily system is not working and I'm in pain, they just give you something to mask it. As opposed to if I went to the doctor and I said, my heart hurts every day, they would say, wow, let's do an echo. Let's find out what's wrong with your heart. Let's figure it out. But when I say my uterus hurts, they say, yeah, Advil. It's like, we just don't treat it the same way. And I feel like that's a real disservice to people with female reproductive systems, because if we think of it as only worthy of making children, we're not actually treating the health conditions that we have.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time the problem is how it's been diminished. They're like, oh, well, it's just PMS. It's just because of that, making it out like it's nothing. And we're just like, it's in our heads, you know, it's hysteria. Yeah, it just gets dismissed.
Yeah,
So.
and I think that like we often we're afraid to admit how much pain we're in because we start to think, well, maybe I'm in more pain because I'm not as strong as other women. I remember thinking that often as a child as well, because I was a child when this was happening, you know. I was not at the maturity level to know like this is not in my head. So I really thought, okay, I'm just not as strong as my friends who can handle their periods, you know? I'm just not as capable of handling my period. And we tell ourselves that so that we justify being dismissed.
So, how did you go into sort of wanting and trying for a child?
Well, the fun way at first. I think that what's interesting is I think most people go through a phase when they start trying, where you're almost too scared to admit you're trying. So you say something like, well, we're no longer trying not to get pregnant, you know, which by definition is just trying to get pregnant, like we're having unprotected sex. But it was probably about 6 months into not trying to prevent pregnancy that we realized, wait, shouldn't this have happened? You know, shouldn't this have happened on its own yet? And that's when we shifted to, well, let's actively try. Let's do, you know, the temperature checks and the calendaring and like the looking at the mucus and the whole thing. And you start, I slowly became more and more obsessed with those details. It wasn't so long. I was under 35. So at this time, the doctors say try for a whole year before you see anyone. And then I did get pregnant. And so we thought, oh, it just took a little while. No big deal. Went into the doctor for, you know, the 7 8 week ultrasound, and at that time they said, you know, it's not where we think it should be at 7 or 8 weeks, but maybe some people get their calendars wrong. Although I'm very type A and my calendar was not wrong, I could point to exactly the like time, place, and position we had sex to make that pregnancy happen. But they, you know, they say it's not where we think it should be, let's come back in a week. So we went back in a week and had another ultrasound, and the doctor was more concerned this time. And this is during the pandemic where my husband couldn't come in. So he's sitting in the parking lot on Zoom. We're like FaceTiming or something during this whole thing. And I'm like, I don't know where to put my camera, like at my face, down here. Like, what do you want to see, dear? But at this point, the doctor is a little more concerned. And she said, you know, I'm seeing parts of what we're supposed to see, but also something else is on this image. And she didn't know what it was. And she said it could be a blood clot. It could be a twin that didn't make it and you know, something else. So again, we're going back in a week. And I think this is an experience for a lot of people with pregnancy loss is we assume that it's this like sudden moment, right? Like you see it in the movies where you're walking around and then suddenly you have this moment. But for many cases, that's not it. It's almost like a slow torture. So it was like maybe four appointments, you know, one every 5 or 6 days where we kept going in and there'd be a little growth or the blood would get a little higher, but things weren't looking right before it actually, and you know, the whole time you're sitting there, you're like, I'm pregnant, but I'm not. I'm in limbo. What's happening? So we never really got to feel the joy in it until finally there was an appointment where she was like, this is not going any further. This, you know, didn't make it. And here are your options of what to do next. Because it was a missed miscarriage, my body was not recognizing that it was not growing. So I had to decide either to wait and have my body recognize it, which could be, I mean, it could be weeks. She said people have, it could be a month to take the medication at home or do the DNC. So that was, you know, that was my first pregnancy loss. But still at that time, I felt very much like people kind of shrugged their shoulders because it happens. There was a lot of, well, miscarriages happen. Almost like trying to make me feel comforted. They'd be like, yeah, a lot of women have miscarriages. It's like, why would I feel comforted that a lot of us have this horrible thing happen? That doesn't make me feel better. That just makes me feel like a lot of us are sad. It also is why the doctor didn't do any tests, didn't push to say, you know, let's test let's test the tissue. Let's, you know, take some blood tests. Let's see what's going on. Instead, they were like, well, it was your first pregnancy that we know of, and this happens. So try again. So that was probably my first regret in the process, that this traumatic thing happened. And I just said, okay, and we'll try again. And frankly, it wasn't until the third miscarriage that insurance would even cover pregnancy loss testing. So, you know, I had a second miscarriage and still they were like, all right, this is really unfortunate. This is really bad luck. Now you fall into a different data bracket, but I actually didn't have coverage yet to do a whole gambit of testing. So it wasn't until the third miscarriage that finally we were being really taken seriously with doctors, that insurance would cover testing, that we really stopped trying naturally and said, there is clearly something wrong. And that's when we started looking into specialists and seeing what our options were to figure out what it was.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time when people say about the first one, I think they think, well, you know, it could have just been a fluke, you know? So that's why they brush it off so much. With my first miscarriage, I was like really broken, obviously, about it. And I said to my husband, it's this, it's that. And he's like, well, no, we don't know. And he's like, it could have just been something random genetic that we just don't know. And we won't ever know because we didn't get anything tested. So, you know, that's done. So then I was like, okay. But then the second one happened. And then I was like, well, what does this mean? Because the first one can be a fluke, but the second one can't be. You can't like have like a random occurrence happen twice, like in a row. So this needs to be, this is something else. And I think once you have the second one, you're like, okay, can we do something about this now? And then they're like, no, because two isn't enough.
Right. We need you to have one more trauma before we'll test it out.
We need you to lose one more baby. And you're like, seriously? Yeah,
it's infuriating. It's so frustrating.
Yeah. And I mean, what did you choose? Like, I mean, that's a crappy choice. Like all of us who are faced with this choice, they're like, oh yeah, you have three choices. Well, they all suck. Can I have something else?
I chose to take the medication and pass it at home. In hindsight, I would have probably done the DNC so we could have, you know, they would have tested the tissue then, but it wasn't really an offering to test the tissue to me. I only know now that I could have asked for that. And I also, in my subsequent miscarriages, have still taken the medication at home and collected the tissue to get it tested. The reason I wanted to do it at home was because I wanted control over when. I definitely knew I didn't want to just wait and just have to like go about my life and wonder when this was going to happen. I already had felt like I'd been walking around with this loss inside of me for weeks and I couldn't do it anymore. Very grateful that I live in a state that has this medication readily available. You know, I think often about how there are a lot of places in our country where women don't have that option. And it doesn't matter what the medical reason is, pharmacies just aren't carrying it anymore. So I had the option and I'm glad I could do it at home because I was able to schedule it. I took the medication on a Friday. I had the weekend. I really appreciated that I could just be in my home, in my safe space with my dog and my husband and my mess and my shows. And, you know, I'm glad that I did it that way. There's no good option. Whatever people choose, they're all terrible. This was the one that felt most comforting to me. So that's what I did. I've had 5 miscarriages in total. And 2 of them passed naturally. 3 of them I've had to take the medication. And I've opted the medication every time. The last one was an IVF transfer miscarriage. And we did still retest the tissue. I collected that and we tested that. It's such a horrible choice to have to make. I feel very grateful. I live in a place that has that choice, though. I know that not everywhere in the world is that choice available.
Yeah. How were your natural losses?
The first one was really hard. It was actually the day of my sister's wedding. So I knew that I was home in Chicago visiting family, and this was my second pregnancy. So I was still a bit of the mindset like, oh, okay, the first one was a fluke and I'm pregnant again. And we brought home little jumpers to give to my parents and surprise them. And they knew I'd been pregnant before and they knew we'd been trying. So we got a video, you know, it was the first time I got to try to, it was the first and last time I got to have an exciting announcement. And while I'm not done trying, I know that I'm never going to have an exciting announcement again, because there will never again be a pregnancy for me that I feel excited and optimistic about. I'm terrified of being pregnant again. But, you know, we went home and I was doing blood draws while I was home, while I was visiting, to check our levels, just to make sure everything was increasing. And the last one I had done had taken a real stark decrease. So we spoke to my doctor and they said, you know, this one's, you're losing this one as well. But because I was in Chicago visiting family for this wedding, I couldn't really do anything about it until I got back home to California. So this was on like Thursday that we found out we were losing the pregnancy. Saturday was the wedding when it actually ended up happening. My family, you know, it was also a very small wedding. It was like 20 people in a backyard because it's during, you know, it was post vaccines, but still early enough in the pandemic that this wasn't a big gathering. I went to the ceremony and we were at the reception and I felt the, you know, strong cramps. It was more the scenes you see in the movies, the strong cramps start coming. And so my husband and I left then. We went back to my parents' house and that ended up being the night. So that was really hard. And it was definitely the moment where I knew something's wrong with me. Something is wrong, or something is wrong that is causing this. Like you said, no one can be so unlucky. This can't just be bad luck. So that was really tough. And then the other one that I lost naturally as well was the shortest pregnancy length. The next pregnancy was also a natural loss, but I was only pregnant, not that at any length it feels okay, but because it was 5 weeks, the physical part of passing was easier. Of course, there's never a time, no length where it doesn't feel emotionally very hard, but it was early enough that a DNC was not going to be necessary. So that one happened on its own as well. And then it was the next two were later on. The next two were through IVF transfers.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about the IVF transfer ones where, because you're taking hormonal treatments, if you don't find out early, it's going to be like 11 weeks, 12 weeks before you.
Yeah, the medications were continuing to tell my body that it was pregnant and everything was fine. Yeah. So it was only through ultrasounds that we knew things weren't fine.
Yeah. And does it take,
you could stop taking the medication, but it could be weeks, even months before your body knows it on your own. And
yeah, that's what was going to happen.
You know, that was not for me. The waiting, the not knowing when, not for me. I'm not a very patient person.
Honestly, the wait is probably, I'd say it was the worst part for me. You know, I got told that I was losing the baby and that I was going to lose the baby because the baby hadn't actually grown and formed properly. Like if it was there, it was there, but it was just like a sack. And then they said, you know, it should be 3 weeks. It was not 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I went from the 5th of May all the way until the 20th of June. So I was like, when's it happening? Like,
it's horrible. It's horrible.
There was times where I started bleeding and it was on and off, on and off, on and off. And I was like, am I done? Like, that was so okay, you know?
Yeah.
That was like, that wasn't a heavy period. That was like a light one. Like, uh-huh. That was like a normal period. and then the egg. But yeah, I think the important thing is that we remember that it's a delivery. Did you have anyone tell you that you were?
No. Oh gosh. And I tell everyone now. I probably tell people at times when it makes no sense to tell them. I'm like at a dinner party. I'm like, hey, did you know that you have contractions when you miscarry? And everyone looks at me and they're like, we were talking about Game of Thrones. And I'm like, oh, okay. Back to that. I was not at all warned about the pain. I was not at all warned that you have contractions, that you actually have labor pains. Yeah. I was definitely not warned about how messy it would be, you know, especially the later ones. I mean, at one point during my last one, I just got in the bathtub and sat in the bathtub for hours because I was like, I was wearing adult diapers, I had towels down, and it was just too messy that I was like, this is absurd. I feel like I'm trying to like sop up a drain that just keeps running. So I just got in the bathtub with a book and that's where I waited. You know, I just wish I had been warned what to expect. I wish I'd been warned what to see. I think that it would really, really help people with the trauma if they knew what it was visibly going to look like, no matter the stage, because, you know, you have this moment where it happens. And then I realized I didn't plan for what to do next. And so I'm like, well, do you flush it? Do you throw it out? Do you know, what happens next? And all of those questions, I just feel like someone, a nurse, someone, especially my first loss, could have and should have sat with me and said, this is going to be a really hard conversation, but you should know what to anticipate. Because I think that there's so much trauma that we hold in the unexpected, in not knowing that this was going to come. And so I do try to let people know, like, hey, knowing what's going to happen is not going to jinx it into happening. You know, a pregnant woman knowing what that experience is not going to jinx her, but it could help prepare them a little bit better for what to expect.
Yeah. I feel like every woman needs to be handed like a pamphlet, even like, you know, not even told, but like a pamphlet, you know, because they give pamphlets about breastfeeding and the safety of not co-sleeping and all this stuff. So why can't they give pamphlets about, okay, you're pregnant, you know, but this is what happens if, you know, it doesn't work out.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. So, because like we were told, it is common.
Yeah.
So why don't we know what that feels like, what that physically feels like, what it looks like? Like, if it's so common, why is it also so unknown?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think a lot of it is known. It's just people don't want to talk about it because it is not positive, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like they could have pamphlets where they explain what's going to happen to you, and they just don't. And a lot of the time, you're right, it's like a long, drawn-out process. It's not like an instant, oh, whoa, I just miscarried. It's a, oh, crap. You know, this is going on for weeks because most of us have to go and get checked and checked and checked and checked. Oh, no, there's no growth.
Yeah, absolutely. It is weeks. And I think that now that I am a part of this incredible supportive community of people who have had losses or infertility or going through IVF, it's such an incredible community that I wish I had at the beginning, because it helps you feel so much less alone, but it's also information. For example, I've been connected to this woman in the community who was, you know, she found out she was going to be losing her pregnancy and she didn't know what to expect. And because we've developed enough of a closeness, this internet friend of mine, I told her, look, send photos, call me, whatever you need. So she did. She would text me photos of, you know, her underwear and say, is this it? And I, because she wanted to collect the tissue to be able to test it, to understand her options, understand what happened. And so I was able to say, I'm like, you know what? I think actually that's not it yet, but it's probably going to be tonight. So stay in, you know, prepare for that because we're not quite certain. And then I showed her photos I had. I'm like, hey, this is kind of what you're looking for. And it's horrible, horrible conversation, but her and I are so close now because we had, who else are you going to talk to about that? Who else are you going to ask that question? And no one wants to Google that because you're always going to see way worse too, you know, or whatever you Google is going to be tenfold as terrifying as just talking to a friend.
Yeah. And you might not get that extra information as well that kind of like puts it into perspective and that, you know, is that person okay? Are they alive? Like, did they go to the hospital? Because some of those scenes are awful. I love that you took pictures. I took pictures of my sack. So, because, I mean, that's all we have. That's all the evidence of that.
I honestly didn't the first time. And I did the next time because I, you know, and I even said to my husband, I'm like, I don't know why I feel inclined to do this, but I feel inclined to memorialize that this happened, that this pregnancy was real, that this was real. And then it did just become information for other people. You know, it did just become a tool I could share. And I could say, I was able to say to them, you know, this is what my loss looked like at 8 weeks. This is what my loss looked like at 12 weeks. You're at, you know, 10 weeks. So expect the size, something in the middle. And I just think that it's already scary and hard enough without needing to feel alone in it.
I mean, that might be why you felt the inclination to take those photos, is because, you know, you were going to need to use them to help other women. And that's a beautiful thing. It, you know, it's a horrible thing that we go through, but we can do beautiful things with the pain, with the ugliness of it. I mean, even down to me taking a picture of the sack, I'm sure there's someone who's going to be delivering something like that. So I can, if I ever come across someone who's got a blighted ovum, I can be like, well, this is what it looks like when it comes out. So be prepared because you feel kind of horrified and like you just gave birth to an alien. So it is crazy. And I mean, I had researched before when I found out I was miscarrying, and I looked up the different options, and like I'd heard horror stories about the pill. So you're like one of the first people I've spoken to who didn't go to the hospital. I've got to say, though, the scene that you've described, like a lot of the time they say go to the hospital if that's the amount of blood that you have. But I'm guessing you didn't get told that either.
I did end up calling our clinic during one of them when it was so much and lasting so long. And then we started the monitoring of it. And, you know, if they basically said, if it continues in X number of hours, we want you to come in if it, you know, continues. But, you know, they did also say, this can happen. And after you pass the tissue is when we really want to see the bleeding stop. So if you're bleeding a lot right now, your body is doing what it's supposed to be doing and try to pass. It is one of those things though where you're kind of questioning everything. You're like, is this supposed to be how it's supposed to happen? How long is it supposed to last? But at the same time, every single time, you definitely do not get used to miscarriages. I at least have not gotten used to miscarriages. If anything, I get less and less used to it. They become more and more traumatizing, and now I'm frankly terrified of a pregnancy. But I don't know, I wasn't in a logical headspace. I think I was trying to disassociate from what was physically happening. So I would sit in the bathtub and read like a fantasy novel. You know, I would read something totally different that I could escape into and pretend everything happening from my waist down was not happening. So I tried to distract myself. I tried not to pay attention to it. And frankly, the contractions were painful enough, the pain of it, that I don't think you as easily can think about the medical need to be like, do I need to go to a doctor? I think I was really just thinking, why go to a doctor? The loss is, it's lost. It's done. What are they going to do? You know? So you forget about your own health a little bit, I think is what it was. I was like, I just came from the clinic and they told me that there's no longer a heartbeat. I don't need to go back to have them remind me that there's no longer a heartbeat. Like, we already did that. The idea of going back to another doctor after all of that, I was like, no, I'm getting in the tub. This is where I'm going to be. You can find me here.
I'm glad we could laugh about it, but also be horrified by because it's
Horrifying.
terrifying. Like, and when we're going through it, you're right. You don't think about your health. Like, I've spoke to a lady who she passed out. She passed out, and her husband went, you know, we need to go to the hospital. And she was like, no, I just want to lay down. And he's like, are you sure? Like, you know, you're bleeding a lot and you passed out, you know. And she's just like, no, I just want to lay down. And this was the first time I'd heard of someone who had passed out from the amount of blood who didn't go to the hospital. And I was just like, okay, so then what happened? And she went, I just rested, and you know, I felt better after some time. But yeah, and I was like, why didn't you go to the hospital? And she was like, to be honest, like I was just so tired and I just wanted to lay in my bed and I didn't
I
want
can
to go to the
totally
hospital.
relate to that. You feel so defeated already. It kind of feels like you already lost the game. Why would you go back and play some more? You know, I just felt like the loss has already occurred. What are you going to try to save? And you forget that you go to save you. You know, we forget about that in those moments. We forget that we still have ourselves that we need to take care of. So yeah, I think that we're definitely not making always logical decisions when we're
Yeah.
going through that.
I mean, I would say, look, if your husband says, let's go to the hospital, just have it in your mind to just say yes, because you don't know what you look like, but he does because he's looking at you. And if he's terrified, then that's worth you going in regardless, even if it's more trauma for you and it's going to be crap, because it probably will be. But at least you give him that peace of mind, and also hopefully you get looked after in a sense. But
I think so too. I think that It kind of goes back to the lessons we should have learned, when we were 10 and we had such painful periods. Like, we have to stop telling ourselves this is normal that it feels this way. If you have a lot of blood loss, yes, there's going to be blood loss during a pregnancy loss. But if you start to think, or your husband or someone, your partner starts to think this seems abnormal, just go check it out. Just go check it out. Take care of yourself. I think that it's just too easy for us to say, well, this is a horrible situation, so of course it's horrible, because you don't want it to get worse.
That's often a fear as well, like you don't want to make it worse. And there are a lot of horror stories that come out of the hospital and all that. But yeah, I think we still have to think about our health. It is hard to do that when you're in the moment. So
Absolutely.
I can understand that too. So where are you guys at now? Are you having a break, or are you trying IVF again?
Yeah, so we are right now doing a couple months of Lupron Depot. So after my last miscarriage, which was in September, that one, they were all hard, but that one was hard in a different way. That one was hard because it was a tested embryo. The pregnancy was looking beautiful. We'd been doing treatments for a year. I think one thing that's really frustrating is we assume that when you have an issue, they're going to do some tests, diagnose the issue, solve the issue, and then everything works out. But even at this time, I have done every test under the sun. I have had surgeries. I've seen reproductive immunologists. I've done it all, and I've learned a lot of things that are wrong. Yet it's impossible to ever say, this is wrong, so here's the solution. So, like discovering that I had adenomyosis and endometriosis diagnosed, but we don't know for sure that every pregnancy loss was because of those. So you're kind of always throwing spaghetti at a wall and hoping it sticks. But this last pregnancy was tested embryo, uterus was beautiful, beautiful looking uterus. Everything was going well, and then I got a bleed, and what really devastated me was the bleed had nothing to do with the endometriosis, with the embryo quality, with the adenomyosis, with all these other things I've learned that I have as issues. I've discovered a Sjogren's syndrome and all these other things. That bleed was bad luck, just dumb luck. It happens in pregnancy, and most of the time it goes away on its own. But it didn't. And so it led to another miscarriage. So what really devastated me with that one was we finally had everything working the way it was supposed to. And I thought that we were in this. I was allowing myself to think about names, and we knew the gender. So you really imagine what that life is going to be. And then to lose it for an entirely new issue that has nothing to do with anything I had going on. Oh, it took a different emotional toll on me than the others had. I'm very type A. I did what I always do. I got very proactive. I said, we're going to go into every other test. And I did a tour of, I did like a tour of consults. I spoke to five different doctors that are all very extreme in their views in different ways. I really like my doctor in my clinic, but I had a bit of a feeling of like, we've put this in your hands and trusted you for a year, and still it's not working. So we're going to see what else is out there. And I talked to some real extremists and different ideas, but all of it kind of came back to that loss was bad luck, but let's test all these other things. We learned a lot more. I had a hystero to remove some fibroids and cysts and test again. And all of that being said, we got to a point where we realized we needed to do this Lupron Depot to address the endometriosis. So you can't get pregnant while on Lupron Depot, or it's very, very, very slim chance, and you don't want to because it wouldn't be safe to be pregnant on it. So we've been doing that for a few months. I'm at the end of it now. I've had my last injection, and so I'm just waiting on my period to start, in which time I'm going to do a month of treatment from a reproductive immunologist. Immunology, some doctors believe in it, and some doctors say it doesn't really have evidence of correlating with fertility, but it can't hurt. So we're kind of at this point of like, we're going to try it. And so I'll be doing IVIG. I'm so fortunate that our insurance has agreed to cover it. It's very expensive otherwise, but because I discovered that I have this autoimmune disorder, they're covering it for that, not for fertility. Because again, fertility, they're like, oh no, we don't cover anything for fertility. Oh, but you have this other issue. Sure, we'll cover it for that. I discovered through the testing that I have this autoimmune disorder. It allows us to have some coverage. So we'll do a month of IVIG and some other medications. And hopefully after that, I'll be able to transfer again. In truth, it's not really a break because I'm doing all these medications and I'm doing all these fertility things. But what feels like a break is for the first time in years, I'm not actively trying to get pregnant through IVF or through, you know, natural pregnancy. And there is something that feels a little bit like a breath, like I can breathe a little bit through that. Because I am very afraid of getting pregnant again. Of course, that's the end goal. The end goal is a baby. I wish I just didn't have to, you know, go through the pregnancy part to get to it. But
yeah,
you know, I work very closely with my therapist on this fear. We are talking a lot about how the fear of pregnancy does not mean that I'm no longer wanting to have a child. It just means I have a lot of trauma from these last losses. So it's hard for me to even consider the pathway to get to that baby. Yeah, this last loss was the first time I've become so afraid of being pregnant again. This time has been good to really focus on therapy and address that while I'm doing all this other medical stuff that hopefully will make the difference.
Yeah, I've spoken to a few ladies recently who just talk about this sort of holistic approach of your mind, your body, your soul, like just really hitting everything. You know, you're actually covering the medical things and you're covering your mind as well. That then will help your soul feel more connected to your body and you feel more grounded. It's totally reasonable to be scared. I think detaching fear from pregnancy and seeing it more as you're scared of the trauma rather than the pregnancy. You're not scared of being pregnant. You're scared of the trauma that comes.
Absolutely. It's knowing that of all my pregnancies, they've ended in such traumatic ways. I'm afraid of that part of it again. And I completely agree. I think that while I know it's a medical issue, my losses are medical issues. This has nothing to do with, I wasn't thinking positively enough. This is not this isn't that. I do want to have the mental strength to go into the pregnancy. I want to have that strong foundation. So I think the hard thing with taking time, I think a lot of people might relate to this, is time lost is also terrifying. We're just getting older, and I can't help but feel like every month that passes is one less month in my life to spend with any child I might have. So while I know that my mind and body need a little bit of time before I get pregnant again, I also hate the idea of waiting too long to get pregnant again, because gosh, time has never felt so important as it does when you are wanting to have a child. And years are long, but months are very short. A month goes by very, very quickly. Yeah, so the time has been really good. And I think that it's making me stronger. I know it's making my body healthier as I'm doing this Lupron and I'm doing the other medications. But at the same time, I want to go into the next transfer feeling stable, feeling good about it.
Yeah, and feeling like, you know, you're ready, because like you said, you're living a life and you want to be able to live it in a way where you're feeling okay. And hopefully these things will work out. I'm going to be praying for you. I'm going to be
Thank
praying
you.
For your rainbow.
I appreciate that a lot. You know, we right now we're taking things one process at a time. This month, my focus is the Lupron and the immunology treatment. And next month, it, you know, will be focus on transfer. But it really does help a lot for me to not think so many steps ahead. What am I doing to care for my body and my mind right now? That's what I'm focused on. And I think that helps a lot because, gosh, spiraling, we spiral. We definitely can spiral very easily. It's okay. You know, what I've also realized is it is okay to be afraid of being pregnant. It is also okay to have moments where I wonder, is this all going to be worth it in the end? Because it's all a gamble. We don't know if any of it'll work. We don't know, you know, where it's going to lead. It's all those worries are totally normal. And it doesn't mean that if you worry or if you're scared, that for that reason, it's not going to happen to you. You know, I know that I don't have to think positive. I can just feel and think however I'm feeling and thinking, and it will not have an impact on the next round because that's not how the universe works, you know? So I think, you know, and this community is so amazingly supportive because what's very neat is you do get to meet a lot of people who have their rainbows. You get to meet so many people who go through all of this for years and years and years. And there's always someone who's done it, gone through longer, who's had more losses, who's had it harder. There's always someone that comes out the other side and finds joy in life. And so I really appreciate getting to know people who find joy on the other side of things, however that looks for them.
I've been speaking to a few different cases where they went a different route. They went adoption, surrogacy, and they said, it's fine. Like, I feel so much better just because I'm at this other side now. I'm content, you know, and even if it takes that, you can still feel that contentment and feel okay about having gone through what you've gone through in terms of you got a certain result. And although we go through horrible things, and obviously it would be better not to, we wouldn't be who we are today if we hadn't, you know. So even if right now you don't feel this is worth it, you know, is it worth it? Just remember that the person you are right now wouldn't have been if you hadn't. And as horrible as that is in reality, you know, you're also a really beautiful person. You know, I don't know who you were before this, but you're lovely. You're really beautiful. And every woman I meet is so beautiful. And I get so like emotional, like every time I have these interviews now, especially at the end, because it's like, we're going to say goodbye to each other. But I just, I have so much love for you guys. And I know we all kind of feel it for each other. And we just want that other person to have that rainbow. We just want that contentment. Yeah. For them. And
absolutely. My husband saw me refreshing Instagram recently, and he said, what are you looking for? And I said, oh, someone I know is about to announce the gender of their baby, of their pregnancy. And he goes, I thought you hated pregnancy announcements on social media. I was like, oh no, this is an IVF warrior. She's one of our people. It's different. I'm like, I do hate those, but not this one. This is our people. And I was It was like, I'm waiting on it. I'm excited for it because we have a bond that, you know, we never knew we were going to need. No one ever wants to need, but gosh, I think we just have this little piece of it's like the one piece of the internet that is kind and loving and supportive. And I'm so grateful for it.
And you're right. Like, whenever someone's doing like a birth announcement, a pregnancy announcement, if it's a fellow lost mom, you're like, oh, so
yeah.
Yeah. Anyone else, you're like, like, I'm so glad you're having a baby and that's beautiful and wonderful. But yeah, you're like, oh,
yeah.
So and there is always that little bit in your head, like, it's so unfair. And like, I'm so envious right now. But when it's a fellow lost mom, you're just like, yes.
Yeah. It's like a win for all of us.
Yeah. But then there again, during pregnancy after loss, you don't feel that win. There's no win until that baby's born. And I think that's the case with most women. I don't think I've talked to anyone who felt that win. And even after the baby's born, sometimes you can be a little bit.
I've gotten that way with so many things. I just want to put everything I love in a bubble. So you're not going anywhere.
Oh, no, I keep telling ladies, like, now I check my husband's breathing. You know, it wasn't something I did before. It's you grow and you become more compassionate, and it is it's a strange change, but we learn to love it. I hated it at first. I hated changing. I hated this whole journey, but then I met so many of you, and I started to love it. I started to love you guys. I started to love myself more. And you can really see the beauty in you guys and in yourself. You know, you start seeing the beauty in yourself, and then you accept yourself a bit more, because, you know, it's very easy to hate on yourself, especially if you're blaming yourself for things that
there's so much self-loathing, so much blaming we have to process through. And I find what I often on my Instagram handle, where I connect to the community, I often will share from other people stories that they have where they feel like it's their fault, so that we can all rally together and be like, that's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous, because I would never look at someone and say, this is happening to you and it's your fault. Yet we do that to ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what, we have to remember, we would never think that of someone else, but we can't help but feel it of ourselves. So we have to be in this community to always remind one another and lift one another and hold one another on those days that just feel especially heavy.
Yeah, and I mean, I've spoken to like fertility coaches, women who coach women through loss and through these things, and they still have the same thing. They have the same guilt, they have the same blame, self-blame as the rest of us. And they're sort of quoting that, don't blame yourself. And it's like, and we're only human. We are only.
And I think it is a complicated blame because one thing that I've said very honestly with my partner and with my therapist is I know that I didn't do anything wrong. However, were these embryos in someone else's body, they may have made it. And I think that's the part that's really hard to balance for me to grapple with. And that's where it's about for it's like we don't blame ourselves because we didn't actively do anything wrong, but we also do need to forgive ourselves. And we need to know that, our love and our bodies and all of that, that matters too. So it is both about not blaming yourself, but also forgiving yourself in ways that you need to forgive yourself too.
Yeah, and I think, I think that's sometimes the sort of dangerous thing about IVF and things like that, because you can test the embryos and you can know if they're like perfect. So it does, I think, add that extra layer of complication. And it's the same when you get a loss tested and they're like, oh, it was perfect. And you're like, well, what happened then? Because it's not here. That can sometimes make it harder, but.
And my doctor also is, we talk a lot about how no, doctors don't like to admit this, but the science is not perfect. The tests are not perfect. They can't test for everything. They miss things. We can't test so far. The science is not as far as we would like it to be. So there's just so much we don't understand yet. So whereas we want to go in and say, here's the issue, here's the solution, there aren't easy solutions right now, and there aren't even ways to understand every issue right now. So even I even know, like, when we have all PGT tested embryos, but even after the loss, I had it retested because we know that they can't catch everything. So we're like, well, let's double check. Let's see if they can see something else. And yeah, I think those steps aren't always taken either, but certainly, this is just an amazing community because I do know meeting people like you, meeting other people who've gone through this, I just it reminds me, like, wow, these are wonderful, beautiful, thoughtful people who will be and are the most wonderful parents and mothers. And so this has nothing to do with a universal, desire to not have you be a mother. This is it's just about it's a little harder for us to get there than other people.
Yeah, and I think it is really easy to like be like, oh, is this my punishment? Am I being punished or something? And you're not. It's just sucky. It's just something that's crap that's happening, and unfortunately, it's for you.
I one comparison I often give that I'll leave with is I have really terrible eyesight. I wear contacts. I was born with bad eyesight. And never in my life, and it's again, it's something I was born with. My mom has bad eyesight. It's just you're born with bad. Some people are born with eyesight and they need glasses. And never in my life have I said, gosh, I need glasses. I must not deserve to see. I don't deserve vision. I've never said that. So how come when my eyeballs don't work very well, I'm like, yeah, this happens. But when my uterus doesn't work very well, I'm like, gosh, it's got to be me. It's got to be something I've done. And that's just ridiculous. We are born and some of our parts don't work as well as others, and that's every part of our body. And it's not a punishment. It is just bad luck. Just like my needing to wear glasses is not the universe saying I don't deserve to see. I deserve to see. I just need glasses. I deserve to be a mom. I just need some medical assistance to do that. So I try to remind myself, even when I put in contacts, I'm like, see, this is fine. You deserve to see.
Such a good comparison. Yeah, like, oh, I don't deserve to see. Yeah, like,
It would never cross my mind.
I met someone who couldn't smell, who had no sense of smell.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I thought, and she had beautiful lunches. She'd pack her box and it would just be this beautiful, like, visual, like, thing. And I'd just be like, wow, your lunch looks amazing. She's like, yeah, I can't smell.
So then she made it look good.
Yeah. She's like,
I love
so
that.
I enhance other things and, you know, make it pretty.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I thought it was wonderful. I was like, that's really awesome that you do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, everyone was always really jealous of her lunch. And then she's like, yeah, I can't
Yeah.
tell. And then they're like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah. She's like, I'm jealous of how yours, you smell yours.
Yeah. I wish that I had your nose.
Yeah.
The thing is, as well, she had a really cute nose.
Oh, well, that's good.
I was like, well, you look cute and I love your nose. And she's just like, thanks.
It's all decorative. She's
Yes.
like,
It doesn't do anything.
yeah.
But yeah, thank you for that last note. Because I think that I was going to ask you, you know, what would you say for a final note? But that's amazing. Like, I love that, you know.
Yeah.
And I hope it resonates with everyone listening because, yeah, like, why do we blame our bodies? We don't blame them for not being able to see properly or other things, you know. And here we are blaming ourselves for not being able to have what we want.
Yeah.
And I think
It's
that's
an
another
organ.
thing as well. My husband always says, just remember it's what you want. You would never have made anything happen. Like if you had a choice, if you were given a checklist, you'd tick every box, you'd cross every T, you'd dot every I, you'd do
Yeah.
everything in your power. And he was like, so don't ever blame yourself because you just can't. You
Yeah.
know, if you knew you would do.
I like that.
But
That's
thank
good.
you so much for speaking with me.
Yeah.
And
Thank you.
I
Oh,
hope
this was so nice.
I feel like we need to have like group chats after this event so we can like
Yes,
stay in
that will
touch.
be so great. I can't wait for it.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Ella. Have a wonderful afternoon.
You too. Bye.
Please note that all speakers, including experts and professionals, express information, views, and opinions that should not be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical conditions. If you have a medical issue, please consult a qualified professional. Speakers voice their own views, opinions, and conclusions, and they may not reflect the views, opinions, and conclusions of other speakers. Ella Rose, the Joy of Sunflowers, and its sponsors may not endorse all or any of the views, opinions, or conclusions expressed.